This is Jennifer Payne. Today is March 27, 2007, and I'm here interviewing Mr. James Black for the Brooklyn Oral History Project in conjunction with UNC Charlotte Department of History and Atkins Library Special Collections. Good morning, Mr. Black. Thank you for coming today. We've talked a little bit about some of your history in Brooklyn, and I'd like to take an opportunity just to sort of get your ideas about what it was like growing up in Brooklyn. What was the community like?
Well, it was a close, knitted community, and it was always awareness and caring, and it was a lot of interest in people learning to learn coming up in Brooklyn, and that was one of the most important parts of it. It was the educational part. We had schools right at us, such as Mine Street and Second Ward, coming up in Brooklyn, so, you know, It was very important. And see, they also had at Second Ward Carver College coming out as a vocational school where you could learn trades. So that was our community.
And so in some ways the community was centered around these schools. Was it also centered around families, churches, social clubs?
Well, it was also not so much a social club. Mm-hmm. It was centered more around churches, mm-hmm. and the schools are like, now they had several different churches in the community, and they had the House of Prayer, which is one of the most important part of the community, because it came from sawdust to where it is today, from a tent really, to where it is today, and I was blessed to be a part of both families by being a member from the beginning back in 1926. My grandmother and on my father's side, and my grandmother on my mother's side, and all the rest of the family on both sides became a member of the United House of Prayer. Mm-hmm. So that was a big stepping stone for our family, because that organization had things for us to do. We had the only swimming pool in Charlotte on that side of town, on the east side of town, mm-hmm. or the southwest side of town. There was number two swimming pool. That was Sunset Park and in the House of Prayer. So, and then we had Bible school there, and we had our summer programs at the House of Prayer. The House of Prayer had one of the biggest events that ever been in this city. And that was number two big events for us, Afro-Americans or Negroes. That was the Queen City Classic. And that was football between Second Ward and West Charlotte. And the House of Prayer Parade, American Grace Peace Parade. And you had, that was one of the biggest. That parade was just as big as the Christmas Carousel Parade, mm-hmm. you know. And that was amazing to see people come together for that parade, all colors of people. There was a coalition there. Mm-hmm. And seeing the other thing about the House of Prayer, we had white ministers in the House of Prayer. See, so that was amazing. We have always had white ministers, you know. And people think that Daddy Grace was a Negro or African American, but he wasn't. He was not. He's
really?
From Portuguese.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That is
he
very,
was not.
Very interesting.
And see, and that's history itself, you know. So he established the United House of Prayer for All People, and I wait till I got grown to really understand that part of the organization. Mm-hmm. It don't knock anybody. It don't make no difference who you are, what you are.
Right.
It's you got all kind of people in the House of Prayer, so it's
right.
for all people.
So it really was accepting of all ethnicities, all backgrounds,
all income
levels.
That's right.
That's
right.
Levels.
All what.
Right.
And that's what it is. So
right.
that's what made that house, that organization, the greatest Negro or colored a black organization in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It is the greatest of
mm-hmm.
all of them because it is mortgage free.
That's a great point. Actually, it's very, very interesting.
You see, and it's united. It's all over the United States. It has its own housing development
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So it has been big in the
in all communities throughout the United States, not just in Charlotte, mm-hmm. but it's been a big important part. And we are the one of the only organizations in the United States that never used tax dollars.
How about that?
That is history. That is very important that we have never used any federal money to build our housing or anything.
And it goes back to the learn to learn that you were talking about, this idea in the community that everybody worked together to make things happen, right?
That's right.
How, when you went to services at the House of Prayer, when would you go during the week? How many times would
7 days a week. That was mandatory to go 7 days a week.
Wow.
And see, and I remember on Long Street, we had to water down the shavings because it would be like clouds in there when people get through marching and shouting and going on, you know. It was a place to go to let that frustration out.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, all the kids, it was always something to do. I don't know whether you ever been in the House of Prayer, been around the House of Prayer. It thrives on young people.
Mm.
And you'll see that that organization believes in young people. And see, it has a scholarship foundation that they don't have to pay a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
The longest this organization that exists, this organization have enough money in the scholarship foundation to last the rest of its, you know, its life there. You know, and
That's
it's
amazing.
Open for all people. Right. See, it's again, it goes back to the United House of Prayer for All People. It don't make no difference what color can apply for the scholarship money there in the United House of Prayer. Only organization that has that.
That's fantastic. You know, I've heard a lot of contradicting opinions about Daddy Grace himself.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say that he's this wonderful man that brought the community together, and other people may say that he's kind of a grandstander, right?
Well, you know, your work is your evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so the brain... organization together from pennies to where it is today, and you can be proud of it. Sure, we was made fun of in our own community.
Mm-hmm.
I never known white people make fun of our organization. There were black people making fun of our organization, but when the summertime come and we open our pools, everybody was in the pool, the ones that was making fun of it. I remember that it was a bunch of kids, we say, well, we're going to drown some of these kids that have made fun of us during the year when the pool opened. So Daddy Grace got a, you know, a little whimper that. And then before they opened up the pool, he said, those kids have as much right in that pool as anybody. It's the House of Prayer for All People.
That's
so
right.
Then I learned then how important the House of Prayer was.
Right, yeah. Right, to bring people together.
Yeah, so when they stopped talking, then that's when everybody will start worrying, so the constructive criticism didn't do nothing but make that House of Prayer what is the greatest African-American organization in the United States.
Right, right.
See, people, well, you know, the devil is there, and they could never find a fault with the leadership of the United House of Prayer. You can look in all other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
There's no spot or rancor with the leadership of the United House of Prayer.
Hmm.
We have one leader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's never been any scandals when it comes to the leadership of the United House of Prayer.
And it sounds like they understand, too, that they're responsible to the congregation.
They are.
To keep this, you know,
now,
its original mission.
If we didn't have great leadership and the bylaws and the Constitution and that stands up for that organization, it would have been crumbled down because you got members. You got ministers in there to try to bring it down, and they couldn't. They tried to fight it. The House of Prayer never lost a battle in court.
Wow.
Never.
Not bad.
Never lost one.
That is really something. What about, well, first, why don't you tell me where you lived in Brooklyn when you were growing up?
I live on 2nd Street, 1024 East 2nd Street.
And what kind of house was that that you grew up in?
It was a duplex, like a shotgun. You can see straight through it.
Mm-hmm. And did you have, this was, you were born in 1942 and you lived in Brooklyn until 1966, right? Or no, I'm sorry, 1952.
1952.
You moved out.
Yes.
So what kind of amenities did you have in your house at that time? Did you have electricity? Did you have
any electricity. We had electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
All the plumbing was out in the back.
Mm-hmm. And so, how would you characterize the neighborhood of Brooklyn in terms of the buildings that were in it? You know, a lot of people, when they talk about Brooklyn, they claim that it was this slum, that it was a blighted area. But, you know, we've seen evidence that there were a lot of very, you know, viable businesses and, you know, middle-class housing and this sort of thing. How would you characterize it?
Well, time. Charlotte is one of the most cleanest cities in the United States. So if you went through the United States, Charlotte was really not what to say slum. Mm-hmm. Because what we had to do as kids coming up, we couldn't let a sprig of grass grow in our yard. We had to keep our yard sweep and watered down. So I don't, slum, I don't know about that part of it. I know that there were some dangers when it come to the DDT that they used to shoot to kill the mosquitoes and everything. We were running right behind that truck back then and didn't know how important, I mean right up under it, and didn't know the importance of it, you know, so we survived that. Mm-hmm. And there was a creek that was running right back of our house and right up under our house, and that's how we got our baseballs and softballs and tennis rackets and things like that out of the creek.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think Brooklyn was a slum. Brooklyn was always highly respected as one of the cleanest cities in the United States.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you said that you grew up on 2nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that 2nd Street was a very, very important part of the community.
Well, that was on the northwest part of it.
Okay.
I grew up on the low end part of it, where it stopped, mm-hmm. Between Long Street and Mars Street.
Mm-hmm.
That was down there by the orphan home.
So that was more residential section?
All of it was residential. Mm-hmm. You had businesses down there. You had little corner stores. You know, you wasn't far from McDowell. You were just a block over from McDowell Street. So you had businesses during that time.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, Black owned a lot of businesses during that time down there. You know, I remember businesses there today. I look at the portrait. It was there. The chicken house was right there on 4th and Long Street, mm-hmm. you know. And Snow White Laundry is still there, mm-hmm. on 4th and McDowell. That's the only historical part of it that spells out in that area. And right where in Marshall Park, where the water fountain is the only thing that represents the House of Prayer,
mm-hmm.
In Brooklyn, right there at Marshall Park. Mm-hmm. But nobody really brings that out. You know, that is where the house spread. They can't build nothing on that.
Right.
That's representing identity.
Right.
You know.
The sacred area.
That's right. It's very secret. Well, sacred, I would mm-hmm. put it that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What other kind of businesses can you think of that thrived in the neighborhood and that provided? Well, in its heyday, when you were living there as a child.
Well, Shedrick Ford had a little store right there at Long and... Long and 2nd Street, mm-hmm. when Miss Pett, she had a store right there on the corner of Long, and they sold candy, cookies, and snowballs.
Snowballs.
You know, and mm-hmm. then the House of Prayer had, they had restaurants,
mm-hmm.
And their cafes in there. And see, and that was like a strip mall. And that's another thing. That's another thing. That the House of Prayer had something like a strip mall.
Mm-hmm.
They had a beauty shop. They had restaurants and things like that in there. We the only one that had these type things.
And it was open to everybody in the community.
It was open to everybody in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was the reasoning behind putting the businesses in the House of Prayer, in the church itself? What was what were they trying to do there?
Well, it was just community tried to, where it was convenient,
mm-hmm.
To people to use that.
Sure.
You know, that was nothing much because people, you know, if they didn't have their own gardens and stuff like that, then, you know,
mm-hmm.
you could go to the stores. You had plenty of stores in the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it looked like there was a store on every corner.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to worry about gas because everybody operated on wood and kerosene.
That's right. Were there any other programs at the House of Prayer that that you can remember that helped the community, that maybe educated children or educated adults?
The music. Mm-hmm. The music. the music in the house of prayer, if you look at the house of prayer, years ago, we was on a house of prayer, on a church that had instruments, mm-hmm. horns and drums. We was being made fun of the drums and things like that.
Why was that?
So that was the people in the community yeah. was jealous. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't care what church you walk in, you see a drum and a horn today. So
that's
the
right.
So they have taken part, and that's one of the things that the House of Prayer really appreciate about other organizations. They showed leadership, and now they begin to follow.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so that's the good part of it there.
And now it's, I mean, you're right. It's a huge trend. Everybody's yeah, got music.
Everybody got drums and horns and things.
Yeah.
So we look forward. See, during the evening, they used to practice the bands. Mm-hmm. They had several different bands. I remember the first band was, they called the String Band.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they made blocks and they hit them together and they played washboards and things like that. They made music out of blocks and washboards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an art.
Yeah, absolutely.
To do that.
I imagine
know?
It's a lot harder to do that than it is with the electric guitars
that's
and
right.
the big
right.
basses,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
An entirely
See?
Different art.
So they can put things together. I mean, they made their own instruments,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they use thimbles, you know, like you sew with
mm-hmm.
to play the.
Isn't that something? It's like a
washboard.
Pick.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Isn't that something?
It was an art there. Yeah,
yeah.
That was history there. That,
yeah.
And yeah.
So you said you went to services there 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
What would a typical service at the House of Prayer be like?
Well, they would have what they call praise service,
mm-hmm.
where you can go sing and pray, and then they have the finance part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always have someone speaking about the religious side of it and using it as a way of life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And were there also programs when you weren't in school, let's say, for just the children?
Yes, they have that now. It's,
oh,
it's a trend.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing that always have been, the constitution and the bylaws of that organization have never changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's been under the same heading of all three leaderships.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no changes.
So what kind of programs did you go to make you a part of this community as a child and to educate
well,
you through the church?
We went through, like we said, we had Bible school. We had
mm-hmm.
the educational part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you couldn't read, then they had a place where they'd teach you how to read.
That's fantastic.
They'd teach you your ABCs. They'd
right.
teach you how to count.
Right.
You know, so it was very always have been education. If you look at the members of the House of Prayer, they turn out more educators than any other organization.
Because it was expected of them, right?
That's right.
To be.
They got their own lawyers, they got their own doctors, they turn them out.
Mm-hmm. All who came from the congregation,
that's
sure.
That's right, and come from the congregation.
Come back to
the Now what they are looking for, if they can get enough young people to go to school, there are more nurses and doctors. They'll build their own hospital.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a
well,
great
you
idea.
You see, they just got the senior. They bought the old McDonald's and
mm-hmm.
they got their own senior citizen
mm-hmm.
Facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's paid for. I mean, they don't have to look for a loan. You've never seen a mortgage company.
Right.
Anytime the House of Prayer buying a building, you never see a mortgage company.
And so they can provide that many more
they
services.
They can provide that many more services. So what they're looking for young people to get their education, and they will make sure that they could be employed because they'll build or buy
mm-hmm.
Hospitals and things like that. They're talking about more nursing homes. They're talking about more daycare centers. They're talking about things for the people,
right.
And it's a people organization,
mm-hmm.
and it started that way,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You you mentioned to me that you came from a very large family.
Mm-hmm.
You had nine brothers and sisters. No, there were nine total.
Nine
total brothers and sisters. And so what was it like growing up in such a big family? I mean, were you very close-knit in the Brooklyn community, or did you also have a larger extended family that you lived with, or both?
Well, it was both.
Mm-hmm.
See, it was nine of us living in a, well, it was 11 of us living in a one-bedroom, two-bedroom house.
Wow.
You know, so,
yeah.
You know. And that was close.
Yeah.
That was very close.
you know, it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that it proves that we can live together.
That's right. That's right. And so as a child, what kind of work would you do around the house or to help the family out?
Oh, well, that was chores. That was mandatory. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we had to cut wood. We had to cut the kindling. We had to bank the fires. We had to heat the water
mm-hmm.
From the wash pots to do the dishes, to wash clothes and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So mm-hmm. we made our own lye soap. Mm-hmm. We did all of that.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a little bit about the community garden?
Well, the community garden was something special in the community, and that was something my father always looked forward to doing,
mm-hmm.
is to have that garden, you know. And I can see him now in the fall of the year, the greens,
mm-hmm.
and in the spring of the year to see the tomatoes you know, the string beans, the squash, and all those things. And I didn't like that, but now I understand it because mm-hmm. it brought a many smiles to people's face,
mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't as fortunate.
So you would work in the garden, and it would feed the entire community when harvest time came?
Yes. It would feed people from 4th Street to 1st Street, from Long Street. They came from all over, you know, to get out of the garden.
So I'm curious, how big was this garden?
This garden is about right at an acre and a half.
Wow. That is a very large garden. That's enough to feed all those people.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, what about your mom? What kind of work did your mom do?
She was a seamster.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was also, she was a cook. She used to do special functions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and things like that. But she didn't spend day in and day out. She didn't believe in cleaning someone else's house. She didn't believe in that.
Right.
You know, she was a cook. She got paid good for what she was doing. But
mm-hmm.
she was a seamster and designer.
Mm-hmm. So people would actually come to the house to have her make dresses or?
Dresses, yeah. See, like this time of year, I mean, she was busy the whole time because, see, she would make uniforms for the choirs and different things in the church
mm-hmm.
and things like that, her and my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was their thing, you know. That was just a special business. They'd be up sewing all night long.
Yeah,
you know, things like that. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Do you remember, were there a lot of women that had businesses out of their homes during that period, or did it tend to be more formal kind of businesses?
It was more domestic.
Mm-hmm.
It was more domestic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about your father? What did he do?
Well, my father, he worked for the quartermaster. He retired from the quartermaster, and he also retired from Sears and Roebuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you lived on 2nd Street then until 1952.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you move when you left 2nd Street?
Moved to Southside on Southside Homes. It wasn't a project. It was the homes back during that time, and that have changed
mm-hmm.
Tremendous. We moved from dirt to grass,
mm-hmm.
and we had to cut our own lawn with push lawnmowers, and I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my mother loved flowers, so she had a flower bed, and we would take care of that and manicure the front and backyard. I used to checkerboard the yard and go across the street and look at it because
mm-hmm.
we was taught to have pride in what you do.
Right.
You know, so.
And you had a really sharp looking yard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so the community come together and they give a prize for who had the best yard and things like that. So it was something that we looked forward to,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
doing.
Why did your family leave the Brooklyn community in 1952?
Well, for better living quarters. So we moved from wood and coal to gas, and it was a lot cleaner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and our house was made out of wood. We can see through the walls,
mm-hmm.
and in the wintertime, we had to put cotton in the walls and rags in the walls and down in the floor. You can look down through the floor
mm-hmm.
and see the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved from that to like moving into Myers Park.
Right.
You know, and that's what we felt like.
The
so we had
house.
Pride. Yes,
yeah,
we had pride in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How aware were you at this time of the city's plans for urban renewal in Brooklyn?
Well, we knew it was going to happen. The only thing that I knew, was identity, what we are losing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to identify with. And that has a problem with education.
If you don't identify with nothing, then you have nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we was instilled in us, is identity. Mm-hmm. Know your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important. And that's what's gone, mm-hmm. unhidden history.
And you said that, I mean, speaking of identity, you said that, you know, your parents had lived in Brooklyn for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
before they had children, right? How many generations of your family lived in that area?
Three
generations lived in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you had to leave, I mean, really, you lost not just the neighborhood, but you lost the community, right?
You lost the community. That, mm-hmm. I mean, you go down through there now.
Mm-hmm.
See, there was no Independence Boulevard.
Right.
You know, it was Stone Street, mm-hmm. Stonewall,
mm-hmm.
and it stopped right there at Morrow Street. And the only two streets that you had was 7th Street and 4th Street,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
going through Shaw.
Right.
Going that way, you know. And I could look back at the Driggin Nursing Home. I could look back at the Ice House. I look back at El Chico Restaurant. I can look back at Bonnie Pearson Funeral Home right there beside of El Chico. I can look at J.C. Shoe Shop down there on the corner 2nd and McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at Pittman Store. I can look at Barker Store down in the flat. I mean, I can see Charlie's Candy Shop, you know. And, you know, I could see these things. And then you go through there, that's nothing. You know, represent them so you can tell kids and things about them today,
mm-hmm.
are newcomers to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mean anything because there's no landmarks, there's no identity.
Right. After your family left, did you have relatives who still lived in?
Yeah, my grandmother and them, they lived there. Mm-hmm. They lived right there on McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
See, McDowell is the last place that they start renovating that and more. A little west of that,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I mean, you saw it coming.
Yeah.
Sure. The town had to grow,
mm-hmm.
but you take Bavard Street is the last street. I think that on this side of 4th Street,
mm-hmm.
on the west side of 4th Street, that they kept its identity, and they still got buildings,
mm-hmm.
on Bavard Street today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the library is not there. They got a part of Second Ward still there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much, you know, that you're looking at.
Right.
But then it's good for a lot of reasons.
The process of urban renewal, you mean? Or?
Well, I believe in growth.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely believe in economical growth. And the only thing about economical growth, the African Americans, they got one building down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's on, what is that, on First Street, on Independence.
Mm-hmm.
It was the doctor's building, whatever that was down there, but that was the only building that they had when it comes to economic growth. So the colored people or Negroes, they don't have no identity down there, business.
Right.
And that's the only thing that beats our race of people is economics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, slavery changes in one form and one form only, social economics.
That's right. If you, looking back on the city's plans to raise Brooklyn now, what do you think could have been done differently to make the process easier for people in the community? I mean, you said that it had to be done, right? Because we believe in economic growth.
Yes.
And that, you know, maybe it was an opportunity for some people. What do you think the city could have done better?
Well, you got what I think that they could have done better. I think that they could have... That should have been some type of school that is put up, a high school put up in that community. you got Central Piedmont in that community. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But that could be a school. I'm not saying the old second one, but that could be some type of school there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe in separation. I believe in talent. That should be some kind of special school for special kids.
Mm-hmm.
In that area, something to represent the educational part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's that growth. It gives more exposure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to school downtown and you're looking at all these banks, I mean that's a part of exposure too.
Sure.
So you're preparing yourself for business.
That's right.
Yeah.
It becomes part of your world,
that's,
right?
That,
part of
absolutely.
Your world
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't see. I mean. I believe in economical growth, and I don't put it on government or specific race of people. I put it on my people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember back during the 60s, what I tried to do, I was put in the bad box. I tried to get everybody on welfare,
mm-hmm.
per member, per household, to put a dollar up, mm-hmm. once a month for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take that money and open up our own softwares and dry goods stores.
Right. So
self-help. Work for yourself, self-help. But it got to some sources where you were trying to be, well, back then communist.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm saying? You was being ratted out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Too smart. They don't want nothing. Be content with what they want. So.
So you've touched on this a little bit. But I'd like maybe to hear you expand on a little bit. What do you think the legacies are of Brooklyn, the community?
The House of Prayer.
And
the House of Prayer is the biggest legacy,
mm-hmm.
that has ever been in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. And it's still going strong.
And look at it today.
It's still going
strong. If you got pictures,
mm-hmm.
and your Sam will give you those pictures,
mm-hmm.
back during the beginning of it, when it was on Caldwell and 3rd, up until the day, that you'll see the legacy,
mm-hmm.
of that organization. There's no other organization in this city as strong as that organization that have a legacy in Brooklyn because of that fountain is still in Marshall Park.
Right. And so you think that the House of Prayer is probably the institution that's most representative of what the community was?
The only one.
Mm-hmm.
The only one. What are they doing today that they did years ago? They still have band competitions,
mm-hmm.
from all over the United States. Bands come,
mm-hmm.
for their competition. They still have baptism. They have the biggest baptism here in Charlotte. That it went down in Ripley, believe it or not. They baptized,
oh, wow.
more people at one time than any organization.
How about that?
Yes.
Yeah. And do they do that? They do
they
that
do
once
that
a year?
Now. They have a pool and so many people they can't do it, so they get the water hoses. Boom. And the most beautiful thing that you ever seen, to see the firemen. It was amazing about this politics.
Mm-hmm.
Just stayed in church. Nonsense. Nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the House of Prayer wanted to baptize and wanted to use the city water. They paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So no church and state. So Hopewell, volunteer fire department,
mm-hmm.
volunteered,
wow.
to come,
yeah.
and do that. So the bishop wanted to buy them a new truck, fire truck. They wouldn't accept
say thank
it.
You.
They
oh,
wouldn't accept
really?
It.
Really? Really?
But when they yeah. make donations to it, mm-hmm. see, our organization make big contributions to a lot of organizations, the Negro College
mm-hmm.
Foundation, the Bread Basket. They make big donation to a lot of organizations out there.
Mm-hmm.
See, so yeah, I would say you see the same thing. They did the same thing in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
They still baptized, and they baptizing way more people today.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see all colors of people get bitten baptized. Remember when they did it on over there on Freedom Drive?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people, white people with the kids, get out and just walk in that water, the feel, the joy in the spirit. That's joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we're the only one that has that. That is a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the food.
I've heard about the food.
Everybody talk about, I'm going there for the food.
That's right.
You know, I mean, they have like a food carnival. They have stands. You know, like you see downtown, they have, oh man, the food. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's fantastic.
See, that's okay. That's the legacy. It's going on.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked that you'd like to talk about? Anything that that you were thinking about when you were getting ready for this interview?
The only thing I know is what I know.
Okay.
And whatever you ask,
that's,
you know,
great.
And if I know, I'll say something. If I don't know, I'll say, go to that person.
Well, you seem to be very, very knowledgeable, and we really appreciate your time today, taking time out of your
schedule. Sam will give you a lot more about what goes on with this organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's very instrumental to the Mecklenburg school system. The Mecklenburg school system looked into this organization and what it has to offer the community on an educational level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's something from the beginning of this organization talked about. You must go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Every leader that we have had, every bishop that we have had, have always talked about education when it comes to the youth.
Mm-hmm.
The youth. You know, if you look downtown and had to take a survey of crime, look how many members of the House of Prayer has gone into that court system.
Yeah.
We got the smallest percentage of any organization in the city.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it really goes back to that idea of community and these
That's
children
exactly
feeling like
is.
They're a part of something
what's,
bigger.
What people be ashamed. And see, we was taught shame. If somebody see you doing something, you was a member, you was shamed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that ain't the way.
Yeah, you knew better.
Age didn't make no difference.
Right.
See, so that was the respect and the manner that the manner that we had.
Mm-hmm.
See, we was taught to have manners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, respecting one another. You got to respect your brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
We all brothers and sisters.
Right.
Now, they believe in right, so you know right from wrong. So now, yeah, that was I seen him with a cigarette. I seen him right today. If I see him, I mean, it just, that's part of it.
Right.
You know, I'm grown. I ain't got nothing to hide. But then just that, you know. Because they go back.
Mm-hmm.
They go back. Now, you know your mother didn't appreciate that. You couldn't smoke no cigarette in your mama's yard. Not talking about the house. There wasn't no ashtray. There wasn't none of that. You wasn't drinking nothing in the yard.
Just wasn't acceptable.
I remember I invited my mother to the house. And I had some beverages there. She come in. She sat down. She said, what is this? I said, this is mine. She walked right back out the door. She said, I don't approve this. I said, this is my house. Don't make no difference. That's my house, too, she said.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
well, and it sounds too like what you learned at the House of Prayer has really helped you in your career.
Well, it took me in four corners of the world. I became guest of kings, queens, presidents, vice presidents, senators, ambassadors of the United States. So that part of it have taken me in four corners of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned coming up respect and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I know important of yes and no, ma'am and sir.
Mm-hmm.
You know, age don't make no difference. That's the way that you greet people. You know, it's that personal appearances again.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have self-respect, and it's got to be in you. You know, it lives in you. But you know, God is good, and He's good all the time. And it's amazing about talent. People have a misconception. We're all born with ability, but God gives the knowledge. That's talent.
Mm-hmm.
I give golf lessons all over the United States on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of mine is on the telephone. You know, I have a special phone to do that. And I have a lot of touring pros that consult.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent time with them, and I know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing about the human body, and it's simple. The nervous system controls the muscular system. Every motion of the body, big muscles come from the pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting ready to get up, you got to get up from the pelvis. You sit down from the pelvis. You turn from the pelvis. So that's where golf is. Everything is aligned to the pelvis.
That's right.
It's amazing. The fundamentals, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But they teach us everything else, so I'm glad.
Bend this way,
yeah,
and bend that way.
I'm glad it's you know, and the muscle structure is in the back side of the body. So the human being, he looks in the front side. He looking at his arms, he's looking in the front side. Shoulders are back here.
Mm-hmm.
Your torsos back here, your hips, your hamstring, calves in the backside, they go through the front side. You walk backwards, which is very seldom. They pull you back. You're going forward, they push you forward.
That's right.
Everybody trying to move from the front side.
All your strength is.
Then they don't know nothing about the body weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the head is the heaviest part of the body for the upper body.
And these are touring pros that you're talking about, professionals.
Yes, they just got so much ability.
Wow.
So when they learn about the way that they do things natural.
Yeah.
See, I tell them, I nurture your natural ability.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I can do. I sell information.
Well, I can't wait to tell my husband about you.
See, that's all I do. I sell information. And I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing that because I'm putting back in life something that God gave me, and that's important to me.
That's right.
You give me the knowledge, you give me the mind, I have the will to get it, and that's why I go into the school system and find kids and give it to them.
Well, you're very inspirational.
Yeah.
Your life story is very inspirational, and I've really enjoyed sitting and talking with you today.
I'm gonna do a life. I've been asked to do a book and do a life story. I've been asked in Vegas to do movies twice, and I refuse to do them because of the negative part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not about negative.
Right.
There's some negative things in there that brings about the positive, but I believe in being positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how I got over that hump? Yes. Look here. It was a lot of focus and willing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't appreciate it until you earn it.
That's right.
Because your work speaks for you.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody give you something, you don't appreciate it as much as you earn. I earned this, you know. I cherish that.
That's right. That's right.
So I cherish what I go through, you know. The privilege, that's what it is. It's a privilege to be alive. It's a privilege to be able to give in life. You know, that's the greatest feeling, to be able to give back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you give somebody that already got it? Give to someone that don't have it.
That's right.
That's when you feel rich, spiritually, mentally. You're rich that way.
Mm-hmm.
You're not rich in material life. If you, like the book says, if you gain the whole world and lose your soul, what would you accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel rich in spirit.
It shows. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love people.
Mm-hmm.
And I travel alone.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can get in trouble messing with people.
That's right.
You know, I have enough to do alone. I learn a lot because I open up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I don't know anything, that's when it's revealed knowledge.
Right.
But if I'm clogged, ain't nothing can come in. The cup is running over, so you can't get nothing in a cup that is full. I don't keep my cup full.
So you've got to be receptive to it.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Right. That's how I learn to learn.
Mm-hmm.
See, I already know what I already know.
Mm-hmm.
So why hold that in that cup?
That's right.
That's when you document it.
That's right.
Then you open. You receiving.
Yeah.
See, that's communication. Communication is transmitting and receiving. You can't do both of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm open to receive. I have a direct line of communication. That's having my own perception with me and God.
Well, I think maybe you should write a book. I think you've got a lot of great stories to tell. And
very
inspirational.
Some of the greatest experiences of life is dealing with minds and helping minds. That's the key.
You find that I'm working with a guy in, down in Deltona, Florida, and he was a minister, and he plays golf. And he said, I ain't been here, and he been there, and he read this, and got that. I said, you still ain't got what it takes. What are you talking about? I said, you don't have you, and you don't have God. Mm-hmm. You got to have your own perception. You got to believe in your own self. Mm-hmm. If you ain't got a relationship with you, how you going to have one with God? How you going to have one with your wife? How you going to have one with your children? You better know who you are.
That's right.
If you know, really know you, then you can deliver. But if you don't know you, you can't deliver, because you're going to come with wrath. And there are going to be times that your personality is going to beat you. If you can stay humble, mm-hmm. you can speak that way, you can go a long ways. But if you, nobody likes that.
That's right.
That penetrates.
That's right.
You know, you can beat them with love. You know, that's what, that's how you win the war.
That easy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I was saying, I love you, and ain't nothing you can do about it. So I don't have no problem. I ain't nothing they can do. What can they do about it?
That's great.
I don't have no hate.
Right. Right.
I don't have it. I could, but what is it going to do for me? Mm-hmm. That's a setback. That's. I don't have a direct communication line if I got hate. Something can't get there, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know. So I know how important it is to have a self-positive concept about communication. Mm-hmm. It's so important, you know. I read a book a long time ago about being a positive thinker. Positive or power? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Being positive is power. Mm-hmm. You know, and it don't take much. It don't take much. See, that's when you can eliminate. You have to be able to eliminate. There's so much around you, and so many things come at you, and so many things you go toward. You better know how to eliminate. You know, you got to weed out. And there ain't but one thing a day you go accomplish something.
That's right.
That's what makes life so good. You can go home and don't have to worry about it the next day. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do about it.
Nothing you can do about it. It's going to happen.
Well, Mr. Black, I want to thank you for your time today.
I want to thank
this has been a great interview. Yes. I've really enjoyed talking to you today, and this information that you've given us is going to be very important for the project and for future researchers. So thank you very much.
I hope so.
Thank you. We're gonna,
and if we just need more people to gather the history. That's right. I went to Alabama last year. They gave me the resolution of the state in the state legislature. I've also had the Pine Leaf Award too. Mm-hmm.
That's in North Carolina, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, given by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know how you get it.
But you got it.
I don't know what to do to get it.
You got it. Is it an award for service, exemplary service, I think, to the community?
Yes.
I remember hearing that somewhere. I'm not sure if that's right.
Yes. It's for your contribution to life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a, that's a legacy. You have a history of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, of your work. You know, giving and taking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in order to give, you got to be able to take.
Right. Right.
You know, so you ain't gonna give something that ain't worth anything.
Well, I think we can probably all learn something from that. We could all use a little bit more of that, I think. I'm just gonna